Yeah. Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And swimming into the studio this morning is Andrew Foster. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben. Got my flippers on.
Yeah, all right. What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, last week I had the privilege of attending the 39th annual estate planning conference.
In Myrtle Beach, by the way, right?
Kewa Island.
Okay, Island. Yeah. Somewhere. Us, I knew there was a golf course nearby.
Us North Carolina attorneys go south.
Go south.
So it's always a good time down there to see colleagues and get a chance to get updated on kind of the hot button issues of the day.
And
thank you to Sam Morris, who's one of our new associate attorneys at Harvell & Collins, who filled in for me last week. Sam's a really, really good guy. And he certainly, if you have any questions regarding any litigation type issues or that matter, Sam's your man.
Okay.
So don't hesitate to give him a call over at Harvell & Collins.
Okay. So what'd you learn out of that conference?
Well, one of the first things that came up is obvious is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. That's really the big news items as far as not only estate planning goes, but tax planning in general. Mm-hmm. A couple of concepts that they brought up. One is what we kind of preach at Harvell & Collins, so it wasn't too surprising for me, and that's flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
So building flexibility into your estate plans. Right now, Ben, we're in an environment where it's really good to have items in your estate when you pass, because we're at a $10 million lifetime exemption amount. Index for inflation, we're over $11 million in the current year where we sit. But that provision sunsets in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So we're looking at an environment where we're not quite sure what the estate tax laws are going to be in the future. And so we must build in flexibility to your estate plan to be able to get kind of the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
If you need it, you need to have it. If
right.
If you don't need it, then if it's there and you don't use it, you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not there, you can't use it. So that's certainly kind of the mantra that we are living by. And it was nice to hear that's the going advice for all estate planning attorneys. Another interesting thing is, Ben, as we mentioned, you want to have assets in your estate when you pass, is the concept of upstream planning.
Right.
So typically when we think of an estate plan, we think of who's going to get your assets. And typically we're thinking down the line. We're thinking spouse, and then if not spouse, we're thinking children. We're always thinking below.
Right.
But what about a concept of, passing assets up the chain in order to get tax basis? Because when we pass, Ben, we get what's called step up in tax basis, meaning that the asset takes the fair market value when the individual passes. So it's an interesting concept where you could essentially pass up a low basis asset that has a large built-in capital gain, pass it up to start with through a gift, and then when that person passes, they pass the asset back to you, and you get a new tax basis.
Well, let's think of an example of that.
Yeah, so I would say certainly,
like if you inherited something from your grandfather.
Yeah, you inherited something from your grandfather.
A piece of property.
That's right. So let's just say we have a piece of property out there. Actually, let's just say, Ben, it'll be easier if I just say that your grandfather gave you a piece of property.
Okay.
And you've got a piece of property over there on the water, that he got for $50,000. It's now worth $500,000.
Right.
Okay. And you're sitting there with a tax basis of $50,000 on that property, and you really want to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do? I mean, it's, you don't want to eat $450,000 of capital gain.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, oh, well, what about this? My mom is, in her 80s. Why don't I just gift this property that my grandfather gave me to my mother, who is in her 80s, and then under her will, she'll leave the property back to me. We don't want mama to die. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But when she does, ultimately you will receive a step up in basis and you will get that property at the fair market value, which would be $500,000. You turn around and sell it the next day, you have zero capital gain.
Right.
So there's an example of where upstream planning could be interesting. I think along the lines of small businesses, it could be a useful means to create basis, depending on what your plans are with the asset. I'd really say that if you have an asset that you want to sell, Ben, that is a low basis asset, then this may be a concept that could be helpful for you.
But would there be a restriction on having a quid pro quo that they're going to you're going to be the beneficiary of that property in the future?
Well, you know, and certainly that's the danger when we get into what the danger is. Now, maybe instead of gifting it directly to the individual, we gift it to a trust, you know, that's for the benefit of that individual that will still give us the same technique. So maybe not an outright gift, maybe gift to a trust, but still going to get a step up in tax basis. So there are certain planning mechanisms that we can use to avoid if we're unsure of whether or not the individual would, you know, play ball and give the asset.
Yeah, you better be nice to mom for the rest of her life, you know. Otherwise, she's going to give it to the gardener.
Yeah, so there's ways around that as well. Yeah. And so that's interesting, you know, with as far as upstream planning and a concept that, you know, is a little foreign to estate planners. I would think so. Typically, we're trying to get assets out of the estate. Now it's, let's even use, you know, older individuals' estates to create tax basis. Mm-hmm. So interesting concepts. Another thing, Ben, is we had a three-clerk panel. So the clerks from Guilford County, from Person County, and from Granville County were all on the hot seat, so to speak.
A variety of populations.
Exactly, variety of counties. So it was really good to hear the mix. I mean, we had an office that had 12 employees all the way up to the Guilford County clerk's office, which had 150 employees.
Really? Wow.
So, you know, you're talking about various sizes. But, you know, the one common theme I will say is, you know, and keep in mind, clerk of court is has exclusive jurisdiction over probate, so the administration of wills, estate administration. They're the judge, the sole arbiter. And the common theme, Ben, is, and we've kind of mentioned this on the show before, is that they're receiving pressure from the Administrative Office of Courts, the AOC, and also the state auditor. And they've really put an emphasis and focus on estates. And what I would say is this is driving the courts to be more document oriented. I mean, I'd say documentation, and more documentation is what's now being required over at the clerk of court in order to get accountings approved. I mean, heck, even getting estates opened requires more documentation than it ever has before. And so just, you know, being mindful that, you know, Cecil, I listened to the program on Tuesday. I know he touched on this, but the level of requirements have just gone up and have increased. And so that's just one thing that you need to be aware of.
As he was pointing out, and I know this from another experience, but just even in passing a car, something as simple as a car, you have to have documentation that's more extensive than you would have thought.
That's right. Yeah. And there's, you know, there's sometimes
your word is not necessarily your bond anymore.
That's not gonna work. Your word is going to get you nowhere with the North Carolina DMV. You got to have the documentation in order. And also, you know, the various levels of, you know, when you can use smaller estate administration procedures. You know, there's an affidavit, for instance, that you can use to transfer a vehicle, but it's got to be less than $5,000. And then that form, Ben, just to be frank and honest with you, is so much of a pain to get all the necessary individuals to sign it and get the clerk of court to sign off on it. Heck, I think doing a full-blown estate administration is just as easy at that point in time to get just even a car over, because it does create just, you know, logistical nightmares. So that's a good point to bring up regarding a car. And the focus, they said, you know, obviously is auditing accountings. So, you know, making sure that your documents are there, making sure that they have the necessary receipts from the individuals. You know, one of the interesting things is even if it's a single child maybe that inherits an estate, and I'm working with them to get the estate closed out, and we do the final accounting and we have the distributions and we show what they received, I then put another document in front of them, and it's a receipt, and it's exactly the same thing that it says on the final accounting. And by the way, they're the executor, so they're signing the final accounting. But they're signing that in their capacity as the fiduciary for the estate, as the executor or the administrator. The receipt then is them signing as an individual, mm-hmm. saying that they received those particular items. So it's two different capacities there.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that, you know, those two documents, you know, we need them both, not just
well,
one.
You got to prove that it paid it out.
Exactly.
Because usually, or often, it's not just the same person. So
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's interesting that even when you have an example of just where the person is both the beneficiary mm-hmm. and the executor, you still got to have the receipt there. And you can imagine if you have an estate with multiple beneficiaries, you're going to need to get receipts from all parties that are mm-hmm. involved. And sometimes that can be a monumental task, depending on the personalities
yeah.
and the various conflicts that can take shape during the administration of the
estate. They don't want to sign it because they're afraid it'll relinquish any claim to anything further.
Exactly, and you know,
do we know that? I mean, can there be a further claim?
Yeah, so that's a good point. So you know, typically what we do in our office, Ben, is we prepare what's called receipt and release documents. So the receipt is it's just as it sounds. It says, yes, I did in fact receive these items mm-hmm. That are listed, and I release the executor from any liability imposed. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's been court cases on this. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not signing that release does in fact truly release the executor. Mm-hmm. But what I'd say is that it's better to have it than not have it, mm-hmm. especially when you're representing the executor, to make sure that's, you know, we'd rather them have to overcome that obstacle if mm-hmm. they do want to ever go back and challenge, rather than not have it at all and them never have said, yeah, I agreed with what the executor did and I released them from liability.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good point. But sometimes, Ben, we can't get that document. You know, there's various means that we have to use. You know, you can serve notice of proposed accounting on individuals.
Right.
And there's other means we can get to an end if we can't get those receipts signed. But bottom line is documentation.
Documentation. There you go. If you want to find out more about your life and taxes, too, contact the folks at Hart Bell & Collins, HartBell&Collins.com. Call for the appointment at 726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.
Here's a scam alert, especially for all iPhone owners. But this scam often hits Mac and Windows PC users. Kim Commando with your Wednesday Consumer Tech Update. There's a big scam underway right now using a realistic look